Vice President Biden, welcome to the program.
It's a delight to be with you.
Let's start with the assault weapons ban
Yes. That
does appear to be dying in the Senate. Is the White House still pushing to have that passed? Do you assume that it's now not going to happen?
I'm still pushing that it pass. We are still pushing that it pass. The same thing was told to me when the first assault weapons ban in 94 was attached to the Biden crime bill, that it couldn't possibly pass. It was declared dead several times. I believe that the vast majority of the American people agree with us. The vast majority of gun owners agree with us that military-style assault weapons are these are weapons of war. They don't belong in the street. And even, not even, in the recent decision declaring the right of someone to own a weapon in their home for self-protection, Justice Scalia acknowledge that you can constitutionally ban certain types of weapons. And so I haven't given up on this.
You're going to push for it. The majority leader, Harry Reid, says he doesn't even have 40 votes for the assault weapons
ban. Look, last time we passed it, we only had 7 Republican votes in 1994.
But he doesn't have the Democrats.
Well, I've never found it makes any sense to support something and declare there's no possibility of it passing. There's a lot happening. Attitudes are changing. But I think the president and I are going to continue to push, and we haven't given up on it.
If you can't get the assault weapons ban through the Senate, does that represent a failure on the administration's part and on your part as someone who's really spearheaded this effort?
Look, obviously you and others informed in the media will make that judgment. But my experience, having been the only guy that did this once before, along with Dianne Feinstein and others, is that this doesn't necessarily happen in one fell swoop. There's a determination to get a lot. For example, when the assault weapons ban was part of the so-called Biden crime bill that had 100,000 cops in it, first it was taken out, then we got it back in. We had the background check bill, the Brady bill in it, and that was, we were able to pull it out and get that passed separately and then come back and get the rest of this passed. So I don't see this as there's an automatic endpoint that, okay, there's one vote, this is it, fails, now we move on. We are going to continue to push for logical gun safety regulations and methods that, by the way, the vast majority of the people already think exist. You have 25% of the American people think there's already an absolute ban on assault weapons. You have another percentage say they don't know. Almost half the people either think it exists or not sure it exists. So eventually the will of the people is going to prevail, and we're going to keep at it.
You said earlier that you think the vast majority of the people agree with your position on this. The latest numbers I saw from the Pew poll show 83% support background checks on private gun sales. But if you look at the assault weapons ban, it's much narrower. It's 56%. Very slim majority.
That's a pretty good majority. When everybody's
not the vast
being told
majority,
us, no, but 56% of the people. And other polls show it higher. Other polls show it higher. That's the lowest number I've heard. Most polls show a majority of NRA members initially came out saying they support it. Now it's closer. But look, there are multiple pieces of the gun safety initiative we're pushing, and we believe that we will get them now or we'll get them all eventually.
If it happens that the only thing that comes through the Senate right now is an expanded background check provision, universal background checks, is that acceptable?
That'd be gigantic.
Yeah?
That'd be gigantic. Let me put this in perspective. When the Brady bill, the Brady legislation passed back in 94, the NRA and a significant portion of the opposition were absolutely opposed to it. They called it registration. They came up with all these scare tactics about how this was going to be terrible. Guess what? It worked. 2 million, they said felons will never go and get a background check to buy a gun. 2 million felons have tried to buy a gun and because of the background check been denied. And even with that, there is probably a 40% loophole that exists in the law.
You're talking about people who buy guns.
People who buy guns through gun shows and other means that they're not require a background check. Now, at the time, We didn't even, no one anticipated that all of a sudden these gun shows would proliferate and the fact that it didn't include them. We had to compromise to get it done, to get this passed. And it had, the bottom line is that it works. It makes a big difference. And now strengthening the background check, when you explain to people, you have a large number of the American people, by most surveys, supporting background checks, and they think they're universal already, most of them. Most Americans think there's already universal background checks. They don't understand why there wouldn't be a background check to purchase a weapon.
How do you enforce background checks on private sales, say, between two neighbors? What's the realistic way that that would happen?
Well, the realistic way that would happen is if there was a requirement that you get a background check, a gun was sold, you didn't get a background check, you find out the serial number on the gun, if it was committed in a crime, if a crime was used in a crime or it occurred that it ended up in the wrong hands, trace it back to where it was sold, who it was sold to, find out who it was purchased by initially, and then go to that person and say, hey, by the way, you know, this gun was found at the scene of a murder or a robbery or whatever. Where were you? Oh, I sold it. Who'd you sell it to? Sold it to Charlie Smith, my next-door neighbor. You just violated the law. I think most Americans want to obey the law. I think the vast majority of gun owners are responsible. And I think that there would be no problem in being able to insist that there be a background check in order for even a private sale. But we think we should exempt family transactions. We think we should exempt handing down antique weapons or not antique, my giving one of my shotguns to my son. They shouldn't have to have a background check.
Do you think it would be any easier to get a ban on large-capacity magazines through Congress than it appears to be to get the assault weapons ban through?
Probably. As you know, the original bill in 94 had a separate ban on the size of magazines. For your listeners, a magazine is that thing you see them in movies slide into the bottom of a pistol or the bottom of a rifle or underside of a rifle, and it houses the bullets. There was a limitation of 10 bullets in one of those magazines, and it was in place until 2004. There's evidence that it actually it saved lives. It reduced the number of people who were killed. And all you have to, and you don't even have to go back with what it did before. Look now, up in Newtown, or pick any one of the mass murders. There was either an assault rifle and or a non-assault rifle or a pistol with multiple rounds, a magazine that held more than 10 rounds. In Newtown, those 20 beautiful babies and six serious people trying to help them, administrators and teachers, all dead today. The police responded in 2.5 minutes. 2.5 minutes. This guy had 30-round clips in it. He had to use one clip to break through the door, to shoot the locks on the doors. He went into one room and another room, et cetera. They were there in 2.5 minutes. If that had been only 10 rounds, who knows whether one or two or five or seven, those people would be alive today.
Or he could have just reloaded and he just could have loaded another magazine.
Well, the answer is that's not true. That's not true because he reloaded with 30-round clips and it's as far as he got. Just do the math. If he had to reload three times as many times, he would have had, and by the way, if you've ever shot one of those weapons, and I have, I'm not an expert. I own shotguns, but when I went out to the range out at the Secret Service, I tried to put the clip in as fast as I could. Unless you're a pro can do it in somewhere because a second and three quarters in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Look what happened to Gabby Gifford. That guy had multiple rounds. As he was trying to reload the second time, he fumbled. That's why they knocked his arm. Had they not knocked his arm, he would, and he was overcome. It had been 10 rounds the first time around, and the second time he put another 10 round in, there'd be people alive today.
When you look back at the crime,
and by the way, if I can add one thing, there's no limitation. It in no way violates anyone's constitutional right. What is the downside of saying you can have clips with only 10 rounds in it? What does that violate? Hunting, sportsmanship. If you need more than 10 rounds to hunt, and some argue they hunt with that many rounds, you shouldn't be out there hunting. You can't get the deer in three shots. You shouldn't be hunting. your embarrassment.
Gun owners will say that all of these lines are arbitrary. That all of these lines are arbitrary.
Sure, they're arbitrary.
I mean, why 10 rounds? Why not?
Why
7?
Age 16? Why age 18 to vote? Why? Because society's concluded that the capacity to be able to benefit, the capacity to keep yourself from doing damage, and or allowing others to do damage, whether it's behind an automobile, you don't let 9-year-olds drive. Well, that's arbitrary. There's some 9-year-olds that can probably drive better than some 16-year-olds. Putting 10 rounds, limiting it to 10 rounds, makes a difference. Makes a difference in terms of how many shots you can get off before someone can intervene.
Let me ask you about that, though, because the criminologist who looked at how effective the assault weapons ban was the last time concluded, we cannot clearly credit the ban with any of the nation's recent drop in gun violence. This is Christopher Cooper. He looked at the limits on magazines. He looked at the assault weapons. Couldn't find the numbers to say this had an effect.
If you notice, he said, we can't prove. First of all, it was only in place 10 years, number one. The time to study it was limited. Secondly, you found yourself in a circumstance where when the gun ban was lifted, police reported that they found 34% more crimes committed with assault weapons, number two. Number three, this idea that clips didn't matter. Just take a look at the mass murders that have occurred, whether it was with a pistol or with an assault weapon. The ability of the person to kill as many people as they kill, whether it's Virginia Tech or whether it was Sandy Hook or whether it was out in Arizona, would have by definition been limited if they were able, with the same dexterity they used to replace the clips, the 30-round clip, had only had 10 rounds in the clip. It's just simple.
If you look at the numbers, the vast majority of gun deaths in this country are not from assault rifles assault weapons. They're from handguns.
So that's exactly
right.
Are
you really fixing the
main
problem?
No, you're not fixing the problem, but that's like saying, you know, does it make any sense to ban cigarette smoking while you still have global warming going on? Come on. Does that fix the environmental problem? No. But it saves some people's lives. It saves some people's lives. Do you say the fact that we took lead out of gasoline, does that solve the problem? No, it doesn't. We still have too many emissions going into the air, but it helps. I find that a bizarre argument if it doesn't solve the whole problem. But guess what? The fact is that it does impact. It does. And the people I go to look to when we talk about assault weapons and magazines, talk to the police officers. They're tired of being outgunned. They're tired of being outgunned.
Well, when you say it does save people's lives, there has to be some sort of calculus here, right? There has to be some
That's
point
right.
at which you say, is the number of lives that we save, does that outweigh the burden, the restrictions that we put on millions of Americans? So how do you draw
that conclusion? Tell me what the burden is that you have to buy three clips with 10 rounds versus one clip with 30. The cost is the same. What's the burden? What am I doing to infringe upon your constitutional right? I find that, I mean, what burden? I can name, you could think of 1,000 burdens we put on people that in fact are de minimis, that impact positively on society. And we say, I mean, it's one thing if you can tell me that the burden is onerous. First of all, the vast majority of gun owners aren't running around with clips that hold 30 rounds. We're talking about, and there's no good data. Here's part of the problem. Part of the problem is when the authorization had to be renewed for much of this in 2004, restrictions were placed on the ability of the government even to keep data and statistics.
How do you explain that as gun ownership? How do you explain that as gun ownership in this country has skyrocketed?
That's
right?
Not true.
You don't think it's true?
That is not. I don't believe that at all. What you have is you have roughly 25% of adults own a gun.
I've seen higher numbers.
I've seen about
30% of households.
Yeah, no, households.
Yeah.
But that's a household means when you ask inside the household, does that mean if you have one gun in a household, everybody owns a gun?
Well, you go to gun stores now or to shooting ranges and they can't keep AR-15s on the shelves.
That's
they're
a different
so
issue.
Fast, and they're selling and the out of ammo.
They're selling out. They're selling very well. And they're selling multiple times to the same person.
So my question is this: if the numbers of guns in this country have have increased, and I think there's no disputing that they have. More and more guns are in people's hands.
By the way, up until 2004, the number of guns was in fact level or decreasing. When the assault weapons ban was lifted, it became a bonanza. Gun manufacturers did very well because of the higher margin in those guns, in those weapons. But this idea that we're this overwhelming gun culture, that everybody out there is packing, everybody out there owns a weapon, everybody out there is, that is simply exaggerated. That's part of the NRA and the notion this is the new norm. There isn't, you know, and by the way, as a consequence of the Biden crime bill and all the stuff we did, violent crime is down significantly.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to. If there are more guns out there and we now see murder at a 48-year low, how do you account for that?
By the way, there's no evidence that there are more guns out there. I don't see that statistic. Between 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, this idea that there's a significant increase in the number of guns, I don't see any evidence of that.
Why not? What's the problem with having a gun registry, a national mandatory gun registry? We license our cars. Why shouldn't we have to license and register our
guns?
Because
there is a, this where you start to cross a cultural line. The idea that you register your guns, it may make logical sense to say this, but there isn't a constitutional right to own an automobile. You can't discriminate who can own and so on, but there is a Second Amendment constitutional right to own a weapon, the right to have and bear arms. When you go to registration, it raises all the black helicopter crowd notion that what this is all about is identifying who has a gun so that one day the government can get up and go to the house and arrest everyone who has a gun and they'll cite Nazi Germany and a lot. You don't need to register guns to have logical gun safety laws. This is not, there is a healthy gun culture in this country with regard to hunters. They husband their guns and their weapons. They lock them up. They use them responsibly. They pass them down to their children like my dad. This is about keeping guns out of the hands of people who constitutionally the government is able to prohibit from owning those guns. And I know we're running out of time, but I want to make the point about this notion of background checks. You have a circumstance today in the country where it makes overwhelming sense to say that people who have been adjudicated mentally incompetent to own a gun should be in that NICS registry down in Washington, where when you go to swiping a credit card to buy a gun at a Dick's Sporting Goods store, that they're in that registry. 16 states in America have over 1 million folks out there who they've adjudicated incompetent to own a weapon by federal standards who can go into a gun store and buy that gun, buy whatever weapon they want that they can legally purchase. You have convicted felons whose records aren't being sent in. You have people, one of the things we're looking at, it's not part of the original expansion, most people, when you ask them, do you think people on the terrorist watch list can buy a gun? They say, no. Well, they can.
So why hasn't the...